Hello and welcome to the D1 Softball Podcast. I'm your host, Tara Henry, joined by Rhiannon Putke. If you're a huge college softball fan, you're in the right place. We can't wait to share the weekly D1 softball news, bring you interviews from all over the country, provide in-season game analysis, the top 25, and much, much more. Stick around. Hello and welcome to episode 19 of the D1 Softball Podcast. Tara Henry, joined by Rhiannon Putke. Rhi, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing okay. Knee deep in the end of our fall reports and getting ready for some schedules to be released next few weeks and just gear up for the season. How are you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, we had fall reports released this week. We had Texas on Monday, Central Florida on Tuesday. Oklahoma State goes out today. We're taping this on a Wednesday. Rhi, you talked to Coach Mike White down there in Texas. What does he have to say for the Longhorns going into the 2021 season?
Yeah, he's like everyone, they're stacked. I mean, he's excited because everyone's got these super seniors coming back, and it's going to be a tremendous, tremendously loaded roster, like a lot of teams. I think the thing that stuck out to me too, other than Ellish kind of being on the shelf in the fall because she had surgery on her landing foot, she's supposed to be back for the season. Nothing, super, doesn't sound like super serious, but just wanted to get it fixed. She was kind of debating whether to do it or not. So she could actually come even stronger. I mean, because if it's, healthy, who knows what she was pitching on last year when they had a tremendous season and were up at number one for a while and finishing the top three in most polls. So she's back, she's going to be on injury, but other than that, just his comments on Janae Jefferson, who said she's probably the most underrated player in the country and he has no idea why she's not up for player of the year nominees. And I completely agree with him. She is a stud, just complete player. And I think this season, hopefully people might read that and pay more attention and see that. So that stuck out to me, 'cause that was kind of something that I had always kind of wondered, they've got a lot of players on that team. So, it's hard to be, stand out in every single aspect, but she's one to watch and has been one to watch and hopefully will be more watched.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And in terms of the Big 12 and scheduling, I know, in Texas, you talked a little bit about this on Twitter this week, the Big 12, they've kind of tweaked and released some more in terms of what a potential schedule could be for the Big 12. What are they saying that they might add in over in the Big 12?
Yeah, I've on social media at our podcast, I've had some stuff in the past, as we've talked to coaches and this is all going to, this all literally changes sometimes, day to day, week to week. So I just wanted to delve into a little deeper from what I've heard, because it gets deeper every time you talk to coaches and stuff starts to formulate a little bit more, or even in some sense retreats because of the coronavirus. But they're, they like the SEC and ACC want to try to play as many games as possible. They're not conference only. They want to try to play some non-conference if they can. So they're trying to go with like a 56 game plan, basically knowing games will likely be canceled. They're not under any circumstances thinking that we'll get every game in. If they do, awesome. But what I heard from a lot of these coaches is we want to wait the longest possible to make the decisions to allow as much flexibility as possible. So let's not lock ourselves in to, okay, we're only doing this, and then stuff gets better. And then they're like, well, now we have to kind of retreat and we'd rather have to, just cancel than have to try to add, because it's a little easier to do that in some instances. Their potential for like a lot of conferences are trying to think about the 4-game conference series every weekend. They're going to keep it at 3 for now and wait till March to decide. And if they think they need to do it, they're fine with doing it. But if they can stick with 3, they'd rather do that. Now they're going to wait till March. And then in terms of the 12th tourney, which we know is not, it's not the biggest conference. So it's sometimes that tournament is just kind of interesting how they do that. But they want to keep there be something called a parachute weekend that replaces that. They won't have the tournament. And basically what that weekend would entail was let you make a lost conference series that maybe were canceled because of the COVID and during the season, because a lot of times those would games be more valuable to them than just a one single tournament game for teams in terms of postseason potential. So they're leaving open the chance that that final weekend they could just scrap the tournament and do kind of a, you know, like a another extra series weekend, kind of an open weekend. So that's kind of what, you know, got a little bit more in the weeds with that and just fleshed it out a little bit more than what it had previously.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be really key to understanding, especially in the Power Fives, in terms of testing protocols, make sure everyone's on the same testing protocol, but then limits on, you know, how many pitchers that you have or a roster size and what that cancellation is going to be. Because I don't know if you've heard anything, but I don't think they're all, in terms of conferences, on the same page and what those limits are and what, you know, if you have one pitcher on staff, you know, can you cancel a game due to coronavirus? How many catchers do you need? How many infielders do you need? I think that's going to be something that I don't know where that's going to come from, whether it's NC2A or the Power Fives or the mid majors, in terms of what constitutes a cancellation of a game.
Yeah. And when I talked to Mike White at Texas about that, they kind of set 13, like anything below 13 teams can cancel. You don't have to. I mean, you can try to play if coaches want to. And then being like, you know, with I think it was, you know, two pitchers and a catcher, you know, you're down to like pitchers and a catcher, then you can. So there's certain for those two positions in particular. I don't know if other people, like, I don't know, like with other, like it's a little bit more flexible than say a football team where you have more infielders, more outfielders. It's not like you have to, safety wise, if you throw someone that's never been an outfielder, it's not going to be like, oh God, like it's going to be a detriment to like their health. Let's just be honest. It's not like if you're, you know, like an offensive lineman, I mean, there's, you can't just stick a wide receiver there. So, I mean, there's a little size difference. I mean, so I think with catchers and pitchers, it's going to be where you would only have positional, you know, minimums and maximums. So I think those two positions only, and then mostly you're just going to have like roster size maximums and minimums, and their threshold was 13. So, and again, if a coach feels comfortable playing under 13, you know, they can do that. But they're allowed to cancel if it's 13. That's already been approved by the Big 12. So that's one. And again, like you said, different for different conferences, which has been the case with football and basketball and college, that every conference kind of goes about their own. They're pretty much similar, but there's always little differences. And that's going to be the same thing with testing protocols as well. So there's not going to be an industry-wide standard. There could be, I mean, who knows? I mean, maybe softball will do that, but as we've seen with football and basketball, that the conferences do not like to be told what to do on a NCAA level. So they all want their own independent discretion. So that's that. I could see that happening with softball as well, likely.
Right. And then in terms of fall reports, we had Central Florida as well, and then Oklahoma State. So check those two out on the website on d1softball.com. We've got a few more left, and we've also got Fall Report Central. So if you've missed any of the fall reports that we've put out, make sure you go to Fall Reports Central, and there's a list of every single fall report that we've done, going just an all-in-one spot. So super easy. Click on Fall Report Central and figure out and find your best team or your favorite team, and read up on everybody in your conference and conferences across the nation. With that said, we've got also big news in terms of the Olympics. Announced last week, we've got 200 days to Tokyo. I'm not quite sure if we are going to actually have the Olympics, but if we do, they're 200 days away. And Team USA, well, it's actually going to open with Japan and Australia. And their Team USA is on the second game, but Japan and Australia are going to open the actually entire Olympic Games. Softball's opening the Olympic Games in Japan, which is a big deal, seeing as how we've been out of the Olympics for quite some time. So excited about that. What are you thinking about these Olympics, Ree?
Holding my breath. I'm praying they take place. They haven't done much to ease my wonder on how they're pulling off. They've kind of been, they keep delaying and delaying and making no big, which, you know, it's fine, but I'm very excited for it, but I don't want to get my hopes up too much because there's just so much unknown right now, and bringing that many people from that many different areas of the, you know, world, where who knows what the pandemic's going to be like with everyone in different sectors of society. It just seems really hard to me, but I'm praying they can do it because I think it's a great thing. And it would be a really cool thing to come out of this pandemic and have the Olympics and have the world celebrate. That would be a really cool thing. I just hope we're in a place where we can do it, because I think that would be such a cool way to be like, okay, we're healed, you know, let's do the Olympics. And so I pray that we can get to the spot where we can do that. And yes, we need to start off with softball, because you know, breakdancing is now becoming more popular as an Olympic sport in softball, and that's not okay. So we need to have a good showing and so that we can beat breakdancing and get back, you know, back in when it's in LA, hopefully.
Yeah, 2024, softball will not be in the Olympics in Paris, but hopefully when we come back to 2028 in LA, that softball and baseball will both be back. And that is pretty much it for the week. Unless you got,
we got today, though, we got some news today with the NCAA honors coming out. I don't know if you saw
this. Right, Reeve, tell me about these NCAA honors.
Yeah, they release every year. They do these NCAA honors, and it's the, we had a softball player with this silver anniversary award. A Harvard softball player, Amy Reinhard. She was a softball player at Harvard, so we know she's really smart and she's a good softball player. So that's great. She ranks second all time stolen bases, fourth in runs scored, seventh in hits, eighth in batting average. As a team captain, first team All Ivy League in '95 and '96, and in '96 she was NCAA Woman of the Year nominee. So congratulations to Amy Reinhard of Harvard softball. One of the NCAA Honors Silver Anniversary Award winners here. NCAA released that list today on Wednesday, so go check that out. It's on social, it's on the website. It's a really cool list. There's some great basketball players, like Sharif Abdul-Rahim, Michelle Marciniak, just a whole bunch of sports features, so check that out.
Great. So check out all those, the news for the week. And with that said, we're going to go straight into our interview with Oklahoma State alum Vanessa Shippey.
And we're glad to be joined today on the D1 podcast by Vanessa Shippey, the famed Oklahoma State All-American, who is now a volunteer assistant on the staff at OU. And we have the fall report for the Cowgirls going up to it's up today. We're taping this on a Wednesday, so you should be able to read it by the time you listen to this. Some great information there, and so we definitely wanted to have someone on from the program, and who better than a three-time All-American and a three-time academic All-American. So she was getting it done in the classroom and on the field. A two-time Big 12 Player of the Year, top 10 finalist for USA Softball Collegiate Player of the Year in 2018. Career batting average of .404, including .471 as a senior. That's insane. And Cal Ripken Jr.'s got nothing on Shippey. She started every single game of her college career. She had 234 straight starts, a program record. Graduated with 12 program records, double major in marketing and finance. Man, Vanessa, what didn't you do while you were
on a trip down memory lane right there? Thank you.
Yeah, well, even before you got, you know, you were a Gatorade State Player of the Year in the hotbed of a softball world, which is Idaho.
Man, it's competitive up there. You'd be surprised.
Quarter Lane, Idaho native. It's no, I'm not. I mean, any state you get Gator State Player of the Year, and I mean, some of your stats were just ridiculous, so it's obviously warranted, but yeah,
so no, I'm just messing around. It's I love Idaho. You guys all have to travel there, go visit North Idaho, but it is not a softball hotbed by any means.
Yeah. Well, good thing is Boise State's got their program. You know, before Cindy Ball like left, she got that thing up and running good. So
yeah,
that's good Idaho representation there. But
yeah, no, it's awesome.
We appreciate you joining us. Now, before you jumped into coaching, you were an assistant at Syracuse for two seasons before you got back to Oklahoma State this coming season. So we really appreciate you coming on back at your alma mater. And I guess the first question would just be, like we ask everyone, since we're, you know, gradually, you know, inching towards the season, fingers crossed, how did the fall go for you guys there? You're you know, back with the program, you're the coaching realm. How did that, from that perspective, how did you view the fall for the program?
The fall was great. I mean, obviously, I'm sure for every program, it kind of looked a little different than previous falls, but our team and honestly, our medical staff made it seem like it was just another fall. Our girls put in the hard work and obviously kind of had a longer break than normal, but hit the ground running when they got back. And I think you could feel a little bit more appreciation for the sport of just feeling it kind of ripped away from them last year. And they know that there's unfinished business this year and they're training like that. So it's been really fun to be around these athletes. And I actually kind of told them halfway through the fall how much just I appreciated this job and being around such high level athletes that wanted to get better every day. It makes my job fun. It makes my life fun. So it's been a really cool atmosphere here. And we just can't wait to get the season started, really. I mean, it felt like the fall took forever just because we're so excited for this spring.
I think we all feel that way in the soft, even the, you know, the bystanders and the supporters and fans. It's like, can we, you know, safely, hopefully. The good thing is, you know, since there is still issues in our country with coronavirus and everything, we're seeing it in basketball ridiculously amount of level this week of programs on pause, that maybe, you know, as excited as we want to get there, maybe by the time we do get there, there'll be a little bit more, you know, thinking to the vaccine to get us there and keeping and have, like, you know, real games and not get programs cut off. So that's the biggest part of it. And one, you know, this program has been rolling the last few years, really got back to, you know, success and deep runs and contending for titles. You were there when Kenny first arrived. You were one that was kind of made that transition with him. What did you see as a player that maybe told you that this was coming, that this program was going to turn that corner and get back to its roots of, you know, some of the success that they wanted and that were searching for?
Well, man, I know this seems super cliche, but the first phone call I had with Coach G, I knew something was going to change. And to be honest, I think it's even shocked us here how quickly it's happened. But the first phone call, obviously I wasn't on campus, it was over the summer that he got hired, and he gave me a phone call and said my expectations aren't going to be any lower here than they were at Florida, and we expect to win. We've got a great staff that knows how to win. We've seen it, we've been there, we've done it, and we're not going to let our guard down, we're not going to let our expectations down, we're going to hit the ground running. And I think right then I knew something was going to be different. And I don't know if I knew how fast it was going to be different, but the staff came in and just really changed things so quickly. And you could feel our program have new life. I mean, I think my freshman year, it was really sad, but you could tell the vibe on the team was they just couldn't wait for summer. And we knew we weren't going to make the tournament, and man, we were just over it. Let's go home. And it was really hard to be a part of, because I wanted to win here. And getting that call from him and just feeling the vibe on the team the first year of just wanting to win for him and the staff, really, I knew it was going to change. And he's been awesome, and he's stayed true to everything that he said on that first phone call and how he acted that first year. He hasn't gone completely in a different direction just because there's been success. He's stayed true to how he wants to coach and the whole staff, how they want to coach and run this program the Cowgirl way. And they've continued to stay true to that, even with all the success that they've had. So it's been really fun to watch.
Now you're in a different role now. And once you've got out of playing there, what compelled you to jump into the coaching world? I mean, we see a lot of former players do it, but what was your personal reason for wanting to get into coaching?
I actually had wanted to get into coaching in high school. My dad coached me growing up. He was my coach from T-ball on. And so I think he really taught me the game in just a different way. And really stressed the mental side of the game. And I felt like I knew it like the back of my hand. And I was like, you know what, let's just try coaching. And I actually majored in finance because I kind of knew that coaching was hard to crack into. And if it didn't work out, I could always be a financial advisor. And that's kind of what my plan was until I got a call that Syracuse was looking for a coach. And I was like, well, heck, let's try this out. And I was just blessed to have that opportunity, and it all kind of worked out, and I have fallen in love with coaching, and it allows me to be competitive still, which I don't know if I could do a job that didn't allow me to stay competitive. So I've loved it. And I think coaching was just kind of in my blood.
Have you found kind of, I mean, you're still, it's really early in your coaching career, but have you found kind of a, something that you feel like you're really, I want to say that good at as a coach, or do you feel like there's a strength you bring as a coach that you really notice now that you've been in it enough? Maybe that's because you haven't been in it long enough, but something that you really feel like you're good at in terms of that aspect of coaching?
I think, well, what's cool is I have a different role here than I did at Syracuse, and so I'm continuing to learn every day kind of my strengths and things that I need to continue to work on. But I know this is kind of dumb, and I'm not always going to have this on my side, but I just got out of it, and I know now I'm 3 years removed, but it kind of feels like I was just there yesterday. And so I've really tried to communicate with the girls and get on, like, I kind of feel like I'm on their same wavelength still, and can kind of coach from that perspective of having just been there and understanding what they're going through each day, and not necessarily even just in the softball world, knowing how grueling school can be and how to balance those things. So I think that's strength that I have, and hopefully I can continue even as I get older. But that has allowed me to really sit here and sink in from all the great coaches that I'm surrounded by here at Oklahoma State. I mean, we have a crazy good staff, and I learn from them every day. But I've enjoyed being able to connect with the players on that level and try and help them out as much as I can.
But what did you, when you were playing, what did you really pride yourself on as a player? What was something that you really, if someone was to remember you or kind of trademark, what did you really feel like was something that you were known for, that you really wanted to be known for?
I think growing up, my dad just always told me to be the hardest worker on the field and play the game the right way. And I don't think I really knew what that was until I got older, but I just loved playing. I loved playing hard. I loved sliding in any chance I got, running as fast as I could and legging out a really crappy hit. Like I miss that actually. That's probably the thing I miss the most, is just being able to fly around the field and have fun. And so I really think the work ethic that I put in and the way that I played the game is something that I really pride myself on, but I hope that young girls got to see that I had fun and that it's still a game, and that if you work really hard, you can accomplish really anything you want to in this game. And I don't know. That sounded dumb, but that's really where I'm at.
No, that sounded good. That's what you want. You want people, like you said, I think the fun part is a key part. I think you're super competitive, but you can't lose sight that it's it's a child game, right? And just blessed to be doing it and playing. And sometimes it can get too stressful if we lose sight of that. So
yeah, and Kenny really stresses that too. I think it's pretty obvious as you watch the Cowgirls on TV, or if you get to come to a game, how much fun this team has and really always has had under Kenny and the staff. And they continue to, as they climb the ranks, it's fun to still watch them in the dugout and the way that they interact and have fun. So I think it's fun for this community, and how many little girls come and watch them play now and just wish that they could be on the field and have as much fun as those girls are having. But behind the scenes, they're working their butts off to make sure they're putting on a good show out there.
Hi, Vanessa, it's Tara. Just quick question in terms of the fall, and you spoke about Kenny and the staff and how you are able to get the team to compete. Now, you had a little bit of a different fall. When I spoke to Kenny, he was saying that obviously you couldn't do scrimmages, have fall scrimmages, but you did inter squads. What do you think, you saw the team this fall, what do you think is going to be the biggest challenge? Because mostly the entire lineup's returning. You got, Carrie on the mound. You've got a few, key transfers coming in. What do you think is the biggest challenge the Cowgirls are going to face, y'all going to face this season?
That's a good question. I think right now with our inner squad, it was hard to tell. I mean, on both sides of the ball, we were doing really well, and it was actually fun to see them compete against each other. I think that usually in the fall, I mean, everyone obviously wants to play someone other than themselves, but with how competitive our roster is right now, I think it was almost better to watch them compete against each other. We had our top five hitters hitting against Carrie Eberle, and I don't know if there's much better experience that you can get than that. So as for a challenge, we've got a pretty big roster, and I know it's going to be a roster everyone faces, but making sure that everyone kind of keeps their head in it and plays the role that they need to play this year, because we've got a lot of depth as long as our depth stays engaged and plays their role and plays it well. So I don't know. I mean, obviously you kind of usually find those challenges after those first couple weekends, but I'm really happy with the work that the girls have put in, and I think we're in a really good spot, and obviously just need to keep everyone healthy and we'll be good to go.
Vanessa, when you were talking about, you know, the dugout and everything and just the energy that that program has through the, you know, that you can see on TV, I think one word that everyone associates with is maybe some swag, you know, for good and bad. how does the program view that? I know even when you were gone, you watched from afar, now that you're back. I know it can be viewed positive and negatively by some, and it has been, you know, on different realms, but what is your tact of that when you hear people say that you guys have some swag and you know, sometimes maybe some people are kind of older school in a sense and kind of question some of the motives, but it looks like you guys are just having fun. What is the reaction from the program when you guys hear stuff like that?
Yeah, well, obviously I was pretty removed. I mean, I got to follow along, but I had my own team that I was working on up in Syracuse for the 2 years that obviously got more controversial, I guess you could say, here. But just knowing this team and the leadership here and just watching them over this fall, the girls don't even look to be in any sort of spotlight or make any sort of waves. They just want to have fun and they do it the way that they know how. And I think the way people react to it is, it's almost like they don't even realize it. They're just in their own game and cheering for themselves. And that's what I like about it is I've always been completely okay as long as we're pumping ourselves up and it's not nasty towards another team. And I don't feel like we're like that at all. We're just having fun with each other. And the girls do really good of pumping each other up and making themselves laugh. And I totally understand other people's views and where they could view that. It's never fun to be beaten by a team that's laughing over in the other dugout. I've been on the other side of that many times and it's not very much fun, but it's all in good spirit over here and they just love each other. And that's when they playing free and fun, they're playing well. And I don't think you could knock a girl for doing that. So we've been very happy with how they've been. And I think the leadership from the top down is making sure that that's respectful, but letting them stay true to who they are.
Yeah, that's definitely, as long as it's not, you know, directed, you know, in a negative way, it's more just about pumping yourself up. I think people would be okay with that. Every time I've talked to you, whether it be for other stories, you're usually, you know, just coming off a workout. So obviously you're still really intense and that doesn't surprise me, but Athletes Unlimited was taking place this summer. Was there any interest in that, or would there have been if I don't even know if there was contact in terms of maybe participating in that? Or I know you played NPF for a while before you got into coaching, but have you considered, you know, or is it completely hung up from playing right now for you? Are you done with that part of your life?
Well, I think the way that whole thing went down was just tough. I got into coaching and then we had an assistant leave up at Syracuse, and so it was just Shannon and I recruiting, and we were really trying to build that program up there, and it just didn't work out that I got to go play that next summer, and I kind of just got out of it. And then this Athletes Unlimited thing took off and I was right in the middle of changing and moving back here, and I think it all just kind of got away from me and wasn't even on my mind. But I would have loved to play in that league. It's been so fun. I got to watch a bunch of them, and obviously I've gotten to play with a bunch of those girls, and I couldn't imagine a more fun summer than what they got to do. So yeah, I would have loved to play, but it didn't work out, and I'm okay with that. Life goes on, but at this point I'm pretty far removed, so I'm not really sure if I'll be strapping on my cleats again, but I don't know, who knows.
Yeah, don't close the door completely. You're still too young, you know. They still got more summers ahead, so they could. I find it hard to believe if you gave you like a month you'd be right back to hitting like 471 again.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. That's the confidence I need.
Well, we appreciate you joining us. I would love to kind of just, you know, I'd love to kind of end with this. Just, we know you with softball. We know you, obviously, a great student and potential financial analyst if softball was to end, which I may be hitting you up with that feature. You know, that might be something I may need somehow if I ever get to require a financial analyst. But What is something people may not know about you beyond softball? I mean, what is there anything even, you know, dating back to when you were younger, just something that maybe isn't apparent just from us watching you, you know, as a coach and a player?
That's a tough question. I dedicated way too much of my life. Just kidding. I love softball and I didn't dedicate too much, but that's like all I did growing up. But no, I don't know. I mean, super random hobby. I used to play the violin and I did that for like 4 years and in middle school and grade school. And I thought I was really good until my husband bought me a violin last year for my birthday. And I am terrible. Like I back then thought I was really good. And I hear that sound now and I'm like, whew, that's why my dad made me practice outside.
But in Idaho. Wow.
He actually said it was the music room and it was the basement, which was unattached from the house and it was not heated. So when I wasn't outside, I was in the music room. And yeah, but no, I love playing the violin. I love music. I could definitely be better. So maybe I'll have to pick that up now that I'm a little older and hopefully have more skill and I'm not as tone deaf, but I do like the violin and instruments in general. I'm not great at them, but maybe one day I'll get there.
That's awesome. We're going to have you back on to play for us then. That's going to be, you know, practice. You'll be our official D1 softball violinist, if that's okay.
Hey, you know who you got to talk to about that is Jamie Gregg up at Syracuse. She is like incredible at the violin.
Wow, really?
Like, I told her, I was like, why didn't you do this instead of softball? I was like, I'm kidding. Like, you're really good at softball too, but man, you can make some money in the orchestra. She is very good. So if you're ever talking to her, make sure she plays you a song.
We should have you both. You can do like duet. We'll have you both on. That would be great.
I'd be like the person in the background that just plays like two strokes as she's playing like Devil Went Down to Georgia, like every single note. I'd just be kind of back there. Like, she's that good, and I can play Happy Birthday pretty well.
Well, you know, that's like me with the piano. I'm all about chopsticks, and then, like,
everyone. Yeah, exactly.
You know, I'm like, I can do Heart and Soul. How about you?
That's so fantastic.
Well, that is a great thing to end on. We'll definitely, yeah, maybe by the end of this season, we'll have a full D1 softball podcast orchestra with every instrument. We'll try to find out every time we ask them, what instrument do you play? We'll prove that softball is not just one-dimensional people here. We have some interest in the arts as well. So
I love it.
Yeah, but we appreciate Vanessa, Oklahoma State star, stud, legend, and now back as a coach. Again, we encourage everyone to read the fall report that's up on the site, d1softball.com. It's great. It'll get you to know these Cowgirls so we can get ready when the season starts. I know the Big 12 is trying to get in as close to 50 games as they can get. So we're hoping every program does that. And we definitely want to have you back on at some point. And we appreciate you making some time for us today, Vanessa.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
Always great to hear from a amazing player and now coach, Vanessa Shippey at OK State. She is just, and she just got off a workout. So she's still, you know, she's still in it, and great to have her on to join us for the podcast this week.
Yeah. Always fun to talk to her. She was such a stud at Oklahoma State. Like I said, when I went back to look at some of her things, I said, oh my gosh, I didn't forget how much she did, but it's just like, it's one of those where you're scrolling down the page and you're like waiting because there's so much stuff they list that you're like, oh my goodness, when does, you know, like, so she was great. And then, you know, we found out that great nugget about how she is a violin player who has a music room in her Idaho house that has no air, that has no heat. So that music room her dad put her in was really, really nice. So yeah, that was great. Yeah, we loved having her on to discuss everything about the program. Your amazing fall report is up on the site today, so they can go to d1softball.com to find that. It's going to be a fun one. That team is always always exciting and always energetic for sure.
Yeah, and they've got some transfers coming in Reagan Wright out of UTA and Jordan Doge. Doge, did you say your name?
I thought it was Doggett.
Doggett. I'm making it French, apparently. Jordan Doggett.
I write, so like I just know how to spell these things. I'm learning with the podcast. I have to start learning how to. So I feel for those announcers out there. Now I know why you need that sheet that has the enunciation guide, because I just need to know how to spell it, which sometimes is hard enough to spell these things.
Out of Georgia.
So I think from the SEC, I got dogged a lot. So I heard that every time she was up to bat. So I'm pretty sure that's how you say it.
Yeah, I was all into French in Paris. We were talking about the Paris Olympics. So I was looking French on the sheet. But yes, check out the transfers and go to d1softball.com. Like, subscribe, download on Apple Podcasts. And we're getting close to season. I'm excited. I don't know about you, Ree.
I am stoked. And just another reason for everyone to subscribe. I mean, honestly, the subscription is going to be so worth it. And it's going to be even more worth it in a few weeks. You're going to find out soon. There's going to be some big stuff coming on d1softball.com. So get your subscription now. And if you support softball, and I'm not saying this just from, I mean, obviously I'm biased with our site, but you know, we need to support softball. We need to have it in the news and out there and information. And the only way to do it is to have, you know, some people purchase subscriptions and enable us to keep covering this great sport, because we want to do it the best as we can. So we are so greatly appreciative of everyone that does. So I'd encourage that before the season starts to get your subscription in.
Yeah, support women's sports, support softball. And with that said, that's episode 19 of the D1 Softball Podcast. Ree, have a great rest of your week, and we'll see you all next week.